to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. We are. Just check everybody's mics.
Yes. Yep, I think we're good.
We have a pretty packed agenda tonight, and I'm very happy to see everybody here. We will go right to the superintendent's report.
Yep. Tonight we begin with some of the festivities of award for middle school students. So, Mrs. Bates.
Good evening. Mrs. Rachefsky and Mrs. Foster are here to present the students the certificates with me. It's an honor to be here tonight to congratulate 15 middle school students, 5 of each grade, for their achievement in vocabulary. Before we call up the students and present them with a certificate, I want to just share a little bit about what the students accomplished and why we're here tonight. So, if you remember back a few months, I presented the middle school action plan to address Board of Education goals, specifically in the area of student achievement. And one of the facets of that plan was increased professional development for faculty members. And teachers, I don't want to embarrass them, but they sought out professional development, went to it, and I guess one of the joys of being a principal and one of my favorite days in regards to professional development is you send out teachers in professional development, they come back, and these two teachers were in my office prior to the school day starting the very next day, worked all night, were so excited about what they learned and ready to implement it. And one of the pieces that they learned about was this program called vocabulary.com. And I just can't say enough about Mrs. Rachefsky and Mrs. Foster. They were so eager to kind of put right into practice what they learned. And before we honor the students, can you explain a little bit about how you implemented it in your class?
Sure. Just so you know, my name is Mrs. Rachefsky. I'm the 8th grade English teacher. Just so you know, we never want to leave the classroom unless we're leaving it for something that's really worthwhile. We always want to go and get back something that we can implement in our classroom. So we never want to be away from the students unless it's something really meaningful. Mrs. Foster and I have always been on the same page from day one with vocabulary, with root words, with implementing strategies to help the students acquire and retain vocabulary. You know as well as I do, we've talked about this, just giving the students a list of words and having them memorize it and take the test at the end of the week, that's a short-term fix for vocabulary acquisition. We really want to make vocabulary part of their DNA. We want them to get the word and keep the word. So we went to the professional development opportunity given by Amy Benjamin, and she is really the vocabulary guru. That's really one of her strong points, and she gave us a whole bunch of stuff that we could bring back in our class, and we were excited because number one, we were validated by what we did, but she also gave us so many other tools, thank you, that we could use. So we were in with Ms. Bates the next day, and we were like, oh my God, we're so excited. We were just so passionate and excited about what we learned. And one of the things that we learned was about vocabulary.com. One of the reasons we loved it so much is because number one, we could track our students' progress. We could see the words that they were having trouble with. We could see the words that they were mastering. We could also see how long they were on the program. We could see, oh, well, this class spent an hour, average of 3 hours on vocabulary.com. We could create our own list. There were already lists on the program that they could use. And the real key to learning vocabulary is exposure. So they're not just seeing a list of words and then they're done with it. They see the words multiple different times, multiple ways, and it differentiates for the students according to their ability. So they will see a word one way, then they'll see it another way, and they won't. The students that are already challenged, they go, it'll challenge them further. The students that need additional support, it'll work at their level and build them up until they can master those difficult words. Now, you might be saying to yourself, so, is it working? Are you seeing results in the classroom? I have seen some good results on vocabulary quizzes and whatnot, but the real, I think, win for us at this point, because we've had a trial membership for about a month, is the excitement that the students have with this program. They're going home, and they're using it, they're doing their assignments with it, but then they're going above and beyond and doing other things. You know, two of my students here, between the two of them, they have almost 2 million points that they've acquired on this. So they're spending a lot of time using it. So I think that's really the win for us, that they're excited and enthusiastic about learning. So I'm going to hand it over.
really neat part of it is that you can take up to 100 pages of text and paste it in, and it selects the vocabulary words that they feel will be the most challenging for the students, and then as the teacher, you can look and see which words that you feel the students, you know, definitely need to spend more time on, and it gives you practice sentences for the kids when they're taking, using vocab.com. If they're not sure what a word means, they can look at like a sentence and try to figure it out in context and things like that. The other part, as a middle school, we're really trying to address academic words. Those are the ones that students definitely need to know to help them be more successful in their future. A little education on tier words. In education, academic words are broken down into three tiers. Tier one are words that we use every day while we speak. So the kids don't really need much support in that because as they're hearing them every day and using them themselves, we're okay. Tier three words are words that they learn through the curriculum in a certain context or a certain content area. So, for instance, like photosynthesis in science or metaphors in English, those are words as teachers we go over. Our biggest challenge as educators are the tier two words. Those are the words that the students are expected to know, but there's no specific place they learn them. So words like significant, or analyze, or indicate, things like that. So we've been using vocab.com with the students with those words. We, you know, assign academic word lists, so they're practicing, and we're seeing that the kids are becoming a little more fluent in them, understanding them more, and we're hoping that the more they see those words, the more successful they're going to be on the New York State test and things like that, because those words are in questions for the kids, and they're in the more rigorous text that they're going to see as they advance through the, you know, grades. So the more they see those tier two words, the more successful will be the students. So what we love about vocab.com, and then we really love that so many students have put in a lot of their time, and they're going above and beyond. You know, besides the list we assign them, when we go on as teachers, we can see, oh, they went on the SAT list, and they went on this list, and they went on that list. So.
And there's a list of 100 words every middle schooler should know. Right. So there, my kids in 8th grade are working on that. I know the 7th graders are working on that as well. So it's a great tool for us.
I think what you just heard is one of the pieces that's so exciting to be principal because there's so many professional development opportunities out there for teachers, and I think the key is picking the right ones. And, you know, what I try to do as a principal is look through and think about, you know, which grade levels should go on this professional development and which department should use this professional development and kind of targeting it for our specific needs and goals. And I think, you know, we really hit the nail on the head with this one, and it's evident in their passion and what they're doing in the classroom. So tonight we're going to recognize 5 students from each grade, and these 5 students are on the leaderboards for their grade. So not just in their class, but in their whole 6th grade, 7th grade, and 8th grade, these are the top 5 on the leaderboard. So we're so excited and so proud because this means that they did not only do the assignments from their English teachers, but they went above and beyond. So congratulations to you all, and we'll start with 6th graders.
Joey, just so we could tell you guys what he liked most about doing the book at that time.
That's it.
So, vocab.com is like a very good study website for vocabulary words. Like, for example, I never thought I'd know what the word zeal means, but now I do. Thanks to vocab.com. Well, I like that it's kind of set up like a game. There's like leaderboards, you can get a certain amount of points, you can see how well other classmates are doing, and you can rise through the ranks from how much points you get. There's like also achievements that you can get, like you can get streaks, you can like get achievements that are like, say you master an A word, get that achievement. So I think it's a really good website, and that it has helped me study, and I think that a lot of kids should be using.
Awesome. Thanks,
Joey. I love our 7th grade kind of section together. Awesome. 8th grade. So for 8th grade, just so you know, when they arise to the ranks, they get a certain, they're called something. So I'm going to tell you what they're called and their level. So Nelson Lindahl. He's a verb of war.
That's great.
Sarah Charta, she's a savant. Haley Palmar, she is a brainiac. And then Jordan Bauer, he is a vocab guru. And then Josh Bauer. Josh is our polymath. So these guys run the
I just want to take a second to thank Ms. Orshetsky and Mrs. Foster very much for your, you know, going above and beyond and bringing this program to us. I think your excitement translates to the kids, and I really want to congratulate all the kids for the work that you've done here. These types of programs and what you're doing here are really the needle movers. These are the things that will take you to that next level and promote that independent thinking and kind of, you know, desire to have more knowledge, which is really great. So I congratulate you on behalf of the board. Thank you. If everybody wants to come up, we'll take a quick picture.
Just you, John.
What? Oh, picture all of us? Oh, good. Sorry, I misunderstood.
I'm sorry.
that way.
Tall people in the front.
Yeah.
Can I get a
few?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Our agenda tonight is quite long. We have three presentations before we get to the agenda. The next presentation we have tonight is a presentation by the Curriculum Committee, which I think, Ms. Bates, you're going to provide a great.
And you're going to invite up everyone else, maybe, the subcommittee?
Yeah, with the calendar subcommittee, you want to come up and
introduce
you?
Your name's been half a minute. It's kind of a rule.
I have some questions. I know.
Committee, and we are kind of divided into subcommittees. And one of the subcommittees is challenge programs. So the members listed here and behind me are members of the challenge program committee. There are many other committees that contributed to this presentation at our large meeting, but these specific amazing people behind me contributed to this specific presentation. So presenting on behalf of them. Tonight I'm going to be explaining two areas for recommendations from the committee, but before I do, we thought it was important to share with the board and update the board on the work that the committee has done and the programs and opportunities that are already implemented. So we'll start with the growing MYO enrichment program. Many of your children, I'm sure, have been part of this amazing program. This is the second year that the curriculum committee has worked with the emergency youth organization to offer this enrichment program. For students at Clayton Huey and the middle school. Mrs. Rasa was our proud and wonderful coordinator of this program. In the fall, we had 88 participants in 15 different programs, and sign-ups are going on right now for these programs starting in March. And there's a variety of opportunities offered there, including science-based classes for Brookhaven lab scientists, college essay writing, cooking, poetry, crafts, a whole host of different opportunities, both during the week and on weekends.
And you had 88? You said 88?
88 in the fall of 2014. Over 15 different classes were offered, and there's currently the brochures on all webs, backpack needs in each school going up right now for the next session. We're also planning a summer session that will take place the last week of June. The second one is literature circles for grades 3 to 5. That's taking place before school at Clayton Huey. Being implemented by two AIS teachers, Academic Intervention Services teachers, and it's offered for each grade once per week for each grade. And that is a reading enrichment program where the students will read, critically analyze, and be prepared for discussion in the morning. That's starting next week. The third bullet, coding challenge at Clayton Huey. That took place during Computer Science Education Week, which was the week of December 8th. There was over 70 participants, students that completed a challenge of programming activities and were honored with a certificate and a celebration in the beginning of January. The fourth bullet, Creative Kids Wednesdays in March. That's a program that takes place after school for students with special needs. They work with their peers and we create an inclusive environment by including students from the CHAMP program. And they participate in activities such as arts and crafts. And there's talk right now actually of looking to expand that into yoga. Mrs. Corley is actually working, speaking with the CX, see if we can include yoga in that program as well. And the last bullet says other topics and areas being done in front of the curriculum committee. We have other subcommittees and other topics that we speak about at our committee meetings. And those include head theory at the middle school, K-12 research skills, K-12 reading support, K-12 computer science and technology programs, and that includes the Smart School Initiative. So as you can see, we are a very active board committee, and it's one of the committees that I'm very much look forward to going to, because it's filled with people that really are passionate about the topic that we're talking about. So next slide. This is kind of our overview slide for our recommendations. So in the two slides that following, I'm going to be explaining people in greater detail, but this just kind of shows you an overview of what the presentation is going to be about. So this breaks it down. There's two areas of enhanced opportunities. And the first one is challenge opportunities for higher achieving or self-motivated students. We differentiated there because higher achieving and self-motivated, we felt it was important to include both because you might have a self-motivated student. They might not be the student that has a 95 GPA. They might have an 80, but they're extremely motivated. And we wanted to just be clear that these enrichment opportunities that we're speaking of are targeted for that student as well. And college preparedness at the high school. So the first one, challenge opportunities for higher achieving students. The next two slides, we set it up with a goal and then a few different proposals. So the goal is to enhance curriculum and opportunities for higher achieving or self-motivated students. An example of that would be exposing students to computer science at an early age to promote interest in fields such as computer programming, engineering, and mathematics. Now, before I explain the proposal, the committee was very cognizant of, or is very cognizant of, the financial challenges that the Board of Education is currently has. So what we kind of did was laid out the proposals, 1, 2, and 3, in our perceived financial impacts on the district. So one being the least financial, to three being the most. And number one consists of one night, one week, one time events, challenge opportunities, and enrichment opportunities for our students. Number two, which I'll explain, we see as a club, an advisor position, if you will, at each building. And number three would be an added teacher in FDE. So I'll start with number one. That is like the one-time, one-week event. Number one is Jeopardy Quiz Bowl Night and District-Wide Hour of Code Challenge. So the committee spoke about a variety of enrichment-type events. So the Jeopardy Quiz Bowl Night, our discussions, we imagine a night where their questions are initially are tied to the curriculum. The initial piece would take place in school in the classrooms where we would narrow down student participants. And ultimately, we would end with a night where students would compete in teams against their peers and have like a trivia game type enrichment event broken down for students in grades K to 8. We spoke about it would include a variety of topics tied to the curriculum.
So, and how does that work? Your questions would go out beforehand and you would kind of narrow it down for that night? Or
yeah, we spent a lot of time kind of ironing out details, and then we kind of put the brakes on and said, well, let's propose to the board first, and then we'll kind of go back. But we had what we envisioned if this night were to take place is questions kind of developed by grade level teachers, subject area teachers, and initially having a school component, an in-class component we felt like would be necessary to kind of narrow down the contestants that would participate in the ultimate event. So once we narrowed down whether that was done in a specific area of class, whether that was done during time period, whether that was done tied to a lesson plan already, you know, that's already taking place, we'd have some type of day or event that would narrow down the participants, and then students would kind of develop teams. And we initially had, the initial plan was like Jeopardy style, so one person, and then we said, you know, how intimidating for students to be in the auditorium, on stage, in front of all their peers and parents, wouldn't it students feel kind of feel more comfortable if they were in a team type atmosphere? So then that came up with the quiz bowl idea. So we figured we'd have an elementary version and a middle school version.
And the questions are kind of tied to the coursework that they're curriculum.
Correct. You know, we spoke about trophies and medals, certificates. Those type, the first kind of proposal and ideas that we came up with are those type of also the hour of code challenge that we completed in December. That type of week-long enrichment events would be like our number one. Number two would be year-long challenge events for K-8. And what we envision this proposal being is a club advisor at each grade level. And that person would coordinate the challenge events for that school. So we imagine students being presented with challenge opportunities every month. So having a challenge or enrichment opportunity each month, a calendar, if you will, of different choices that students can choose from, and having a different topic each month. So, you know, perhaps in December, when it's Computer Science Education Week, the challenge opportunity will be tied to computer science. And kind of going along with those types of weeks or events built into the school's calendar already. We foresee students completing these challenges on their own and having the advisor guide them, probably meet with the club twice a month. We've talked about them meeting every other week to work on and guide the students on their challenges. And then with this piece, we would like to kind of recognize and celebrate the students that are participating in this club. One example we discussed was at the middle school moving up ceremony, having like a designation or specific time to recognize the students that did complete every challenge each month, or the challenges, you know, perhaps 6th grade, 7th grade, and 8th grade, a student that completed all of those opportunities, getting recognized at the moving up ceremony and kind of celebrating the students that do take that challenge. And the third one, higher challenges, that proposal is the addition of an FTE, a teacher. Their sole responsibility would be enrichment opportunities K to 12. So whether that looks like pushing in and pull out at play QE, and they oversaw enrichment opportunities at middle school and high school, or that person was split between the three buildings. We spoke about having one person who's devoted to higher challenges for our students.
So that would be like during the day classwork for more. How many kids could one person work with?
Well, we spoke about a few members of the committee shared what was in place, I guess, a few years ago prior to me being here. I think maybe there was a push in that pull-out model that worked with small groups, and they spoke about bringing that back. And then we kind of said, what if we expand that person's role and have them oversee K-8 or perhaps K-12? So I think that we should iron out if that was a possibility, the addition of an FTE, kind of the best way to utilize that person, whether that meant teaching their own classes or pushing into existing classes. But I would imagine that it would be working with small groups of students.
And then is that somebody that would be certified in math or science, or how do you?
I think those are all discussions that we have to have. Like, should it be a literacy person? Should it be a math person? Should it be an elementary school teacher with a literacy degree? I think those are all things that we have to really target what the job responsibilities would be, and then how to pick the right candidate.
What do you think number one means cost-wise? Is there no cost applied to number one? Would it not go that far?
I guess it would just be who kind of ran that event, and I don't see there being a cost associated with doing that. Putting on an event in the district wouldn't really be,
And in that case, would you have a one?
Chaperone pay, I guess.
Right. And the questions come from the curriculum effectively already. Is that the idea?
Right. Like, it would take definitely teacher support and participation. So, I mean, we've had the conversation. Let's go with Ms. Orzeski specifically. Mrs. Walter, I personally spoke to each grade level about this already, just during my grade level meetings, to talk about just kind of throughout the idea and we brainstormed a bit. So one of the things Mrs. Orzeski shared was including more students. So if they were to pick five students from the eighth grade, having a representative from each of her sections. So we run five sections of English in eighth grade, and then tying something into the curriculum so that all peer, you have a period two representative, four, six, and eight. So it would, because the original discussion was, why would all the other students come? Would it be a small auditorium of just a family of the students participating? And we said, let's tie it in somehow and have, all of the period two English class cheering on their representative instead of their friends, to kind of tie it into her class somehow. So
like vocabulary.com, you're getting them excited about learning in
exactly.
this way and recognizing them on stage.
So I think, do I see a real heavy cost with one? I don't.
In that case, would you do one and two? Or would you always do number one?
And we spoke about this, too. One of the things, Heather and I spoke about was if you go with number three, if you add the teacher, then that person could be responsible for the number two and the number one.
Right.
I mean? Or if you put on the number two and have an advisor in each grade, that person, one of the expectations of that advisor, would be to put on the number one. You know what I'm saying? So you can kind of have kind of like layered.
We don't see any reason why one couldn't run every year. I think that there is little to no cost for that and schedules, really. Two would be a advisor, whatever cost is. I know Gary is spending on the cost, but that's a fairly minimal cost.
It's too bad that Mr. Pomera left. His father started the most successful. His father was on the Board of Education at Sachem and started the most successful gifted and talented program for a very long time. Unfortunately, it's gone because of what happened to Sachem, putting out 0% for 4 years in a row. GATE was one of the things that was finally let go. But his father knows the ins and outs. Could certainly reach out to him.
Mm-hmm.
And get more information because he started in 18 buildings. It's a little bit bigger than
yes.
that. So yeah, it's too bad Matt left.
But you have here, so spring 2015, is that's something that if there's no,
right.
no significant, that's right now, right?
Yeah.
So if there's no significant budget impact.
Well, that was our goal. Could we, is this something that we can see happening in May?
The others, I would think that we would have to see how they play out as we work through the budget process, what we can afford, what we can't afford, and kind of prioritizing appropriately. But if there's no significant budget impact, then it makes educational sense. I think that it's something that we should look at for now.
And it's my only question that I wrote down, Mrs. Bates, was it's inclusive in the day, right? Because I even know as a parent, sometimes I can't get my child before school because I'm already at work.
Right.
So he misses out on those opportunities.
Like
so
narrowing the students down process?
Yeah, like I didn't know. So it would be during
the school day. Yeah.
The only outside is the finals.
The final event.
Which is fine. Yeah, nights are fine. I know like some of them are like in the morning.
Yeah, we
like the literacy circle,
day.
For instance, you know, and you just, a lot of the parents can't. Like me, when we work, we just can't get our kids there.
I think ultimately what we talk about, at least with the middle school teachers, is tying it into the curriculum of a specific class to hit all the students. So in English classes on this day, we will be, you know, addressing this topic, or social studies or science or math, and having some type of tied into a lesson for that specific day. So she'll see all her students on one day, and we'll have that process kind of down in the curriculum in the day. And then the night event. Okay.
This is great. So what's the next step? If it's something that it seems like we're all in favor of, I don't know if anybody's got it. Is there a next step to kind of...
Yeah, the first one to me seems like you're already off into the races, right? They're already discussing at the grade levels. It sounds like the teachers are enthusiastic and supported. So for me, I just say, okay, we're going to keep moving forward. The others, like you said, absolutely. I mean, they're all great ideas. And during the budget cycle, I think this is what we have a committee, why the committee did what they did, is for us during the budget cycle to see if we can put this in there. Either, you know, either adding, or if we are cutting, which we usually are every year, the question is this something that is better, would benefit students more than this? That sometimes is some hard conversations. You know, we have this and it's great, but does it really benefit the students? And if it's not, then we would replace it with something that you put there. I think that's what the goal would be.
So, and I think that, you know, just talking to Kristen on the others, so on all three, we would have the rationale so that we would have a bit more background to talk about during budget time as to whether you add or not. And on the first one, just kind of more of a fleshed out exactly how you're going to run it. But from my perspective, you move forward with that when we see it all laid out.
Yes. And then you're not finished. I see this college.
Yeah, I'm not done.
I think everybody thinks you're done.
Yeah.
We're not done.
Okay. Yeah.
No, just one thing to clarify on the recreation committee. Being that the committee is an advisory committee, we were struggling with during our meeting, like, where do we stand? Can we move forward with this?
Oh, right. Like, who's running the event?
Right.
Like, is it a curriculum committee event? Are we allowed to do that? Like, who, do we run it? Like, that was one of the discussions at the committee.
And after we were open.
I don't know, my take on it is that it would be a building level event, co-sponsored, you know, by the curriculum committee, because it was your idea and you already have a lot of information. But I believe it's a building level. So I think now Mrs. Bates is speaking to the teachers. If the teachers are supporting and they buy in, which it seems like they already have, then they would move forward, because it's really the curriculum that needs to be taught is already in front of them. Now just taking this and implementing it in, and yeah, there might be a chaperone or two, and I don't even think with that they would be looking for that, but I would more you know, I think we would offer that for that particular night. But I think it would be a building level. Am I wrong on that? Anybody disagree with me? I think it's a building level event that they would take the lead, and I think they already are to some extent. So that would be my take.
Yeah, that's great.
Walk in and administer, you know, tests to the students.
It doesn't make sense.
It makes more sense that since we're asking something of the teachers, you know, parents can't go and tell the teachers what to do. We're getting the feedback that would happen.
Well, that makes sense. If it ties in with the curriculum,
yeah, it's not a replacement.
All works together.
It's not a replacement. That's the thing. I have my lesson plans, and now I want to take this incorporated in within my lesson plans. You could correct me, Sorcheski. I think that's what I write. We just have to alter my lesson plans a little bit to do that, and they would take off. And then, but I mean, running the event that night is where I think all of you come to, you know, into play, because they're going to need help, and we don't expect the teachers, you know, to not only do what they're doing in the classroom, but now to run the event at night. I think that's where we come together and lock arms and move forward that way.
I have one question to ask.
I'm not clear what you mean, Dawn, on one or two events. Are you talking about number point one and point two?
One or two time events. What happens once a year. Jeopardy gets older than once a year. I think there's some deficits in the enrichment, so we need to just do more programs, and that's why we have two or three here.
Right. Oh, I know what you're saying. I think
you want to...
Yeah, no, I think
it would be addressed in the budget. But, all right, for next year.
So if there's no material cost to the district for something, you know, certain and it grows, it's a needle mover, it's those things that kind of take us to the next level, the adding program, that's exactly what we're looking for, and that's phenomenal. It's an easy thing to say, great, everybody's coming together, everybody's getting the kids excited. If it's something that has a cost, that... You're weighing that, right? We're weighing how the rest of the budget looks, those things that are mandated, those things that are not mandated, and the recommendations from the committee, and seeing what can we afford to do. To the extent that, you know, you can't afford these, each of these things when the final budget comes out, yeah, we go back to the drawing board and say, how else can we help? What other fun ideas, what other, you know, learning opportunities can we come up with that don't have a material cost?
And you've already implemented, if you look, you all have already implemented several things, and in different ways. You know, you've obviously locked arms with Mertz's youth organization, and now they're helping out with the, you know, with that. So I think there's different ways to do it. We just have to figure out each one and what angle we go. If it doesn't get in the budget, I think as a committee, I would go back to the drawing board and say, okay, they could not fit it in the budget, but does that mean we just stop? Or are there already clubs that are already here that they've approved that maybe be willing to take this on? So I would look at the, you know, the club advisors if it didn't work out. So I think there's different ways to do it. I think you have the Merchants Community Center. You have MYO, great organizations. I don't want to put in that rank on the play, but PTA is unbelievable. She's on the committee.
Yeah.
All right, you're down there. I'm so sorry.
But you also don't lose. But you also don't want to lose each individual one. So if one item wasn't in the budget, you have in your plan. Bring this up again. You know, it didn't make the budget this year for whatever reason, but we still believe that this is, you know, a phenomenal program or something that we should add to grow.
You're absolutely right, and I think that the principals, if I'm a principal in the building now, I have to look at the clubs I have, and now you have something that's different than all of them, and you have to start weighing it, you know, but that's a hard thing, you know, that's a tough one, but I agree with you. I'm sorry.
What does number two require? One stipend, two stipends?
We were envisioning, and correct me if I misspeak, so we were envisioning a stipend in each building, so having a club two buildings, right, devoted to higher challenges and enrichment opportunities and developing a, we spoke about a calendar, so having a calendar for each month and having enrichment opportunities for each subject, so if, you know, September was math, English, science, social studies, we also spoke about not only the course, major subjects, but the elective classes would have a month and kind of exposing to students, we'd have 1 month devoted to art and have all different options. In the area of art.
So how will it work? You'll have your backup as to that kind of data that you just ran through, give it to us, and then we'll figure out, you know, this program will figure out exactly where the rubber hits the road, how much that will cost for the year.
Great.
Yeah.
I'm going to go to the next slide.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, so the next recommendation is in the area of college preparedness, specifically at the high school. So the goal would be to provide instruction on writing college application essays and prepare students for taking the SATs. And actually, in my conversations with Mrs. Angolia, there was college application essay writing preparedness incorporated into English classes this year, which is fantastic. And I don't want to kind of overstep with the committee, but in an article that I was reading,
Mrs. Briggs, can I just stop you? Because when my son was here, this is where I'm a little confused, because I was here in this building working with some of the teachers back then.
Okay.
So I'm wondering why this is coming up again. very honestly.
Okay.
When my son was a junior, none of you were here.
Yeah.
But I'm a little concerned because we came in and actually piloted a program, and my son was part of it. And it was my understanding, working with this district and many other districts, that the essay writing was going to be incorporated into the English program. And my son graduated. He's in his fifth year of college.
Yeah, and mine graduated in 2000 and 2003. And long before that started, it was always part of the senior class. So I don't know when you came in and did what. But the I was saying, looking at this, if I've been quiet, part of it is sad. I had children graduate in 2000, 2003. We had Gifted and Talented. We had the Academic Bowl. We participated in. My son was on Channel 12 two or three years in a row because we had it. We had an SAT prep class. We had the college application essay writing. These are the things that get lost when you don't have the money to pay for it. So I'm sitting here kind of quietly because I'm like, yep, had it all, lost it all. We can try it again. I don't see the finances doing it. And that's what's hard about education, is that some kids are here when everything, we have it all in place, and some are here when it falls apart. And that's not fair to the kids who are here. And that's why we have to support it no matter what, and consistently and all the time. So I obviously am behind all this, and I think that college application essay writing has been a consistent part since 2000 of our English classes.
I'm just confused. Like, I don't know if it went away or...
So Mrs. Ingoldi is actually on our committee, and she shared that it is embedded into the English classes.
Okay.
But what the committee was actually recommending is an additional elective specifically and solely for college preparation for students. In the area of SATs, I'd also like to add ACTs. An article that I was actually reading from Heather, the ACTs are becoming equally, as if not more, important and prominent in high school seniors' lives than the SAT. So SAT, ACT, yes.
Do we know what percentage of our, I don't know if it's juniors or seniors, I suppose it's probably juniors, that take courses on their own, SAT/ACT prep?
Do we still offer them here at night or no? Like, I used to drop my kids off now.
So do we have a significant portion that take them on their own? I mean, is it like 20% or 80%? Is that right?
I know my daughter's group all took SAT prep.
And is that cost-driven, do you think? Do you think that, I don't know what that program
it's
costs.
It's
cost
three or four.
It doesn't cost kids anything. It's something that we have as districts, by the license. It's independent drive. You want to put on your own.
And what about, like Princeton Review? And
that's a little separate.
And do kids take that?
Yeah.
No, not many.
Not many. And do we know from other districts kind of that have SAT prep?
Some districts offer elective classes. So what the committee was actually speaking about was, Ms. Ingolia did share, they are addressing college essay writing in English classes, but the one of the recommendations from the committee was, can we offer an elective specifically targeted for SAT, ACT, and college essay prep, and solely and only that? And we left it as, so the proposal, like I said, SAT elective preparation, a college essay application, or financial life skills. We spoke about credit cards, checkbook, student loans, that type of thing. Really preparing them kind of for finances after high school. And we left it as additional FTE sections because really and truly, does that mean one additional teacher? Does that mean a 0.5? I guess it would depend on how many sections we were running and offering. And if kind of the board and high school administration envision that as, is that a semester class, a half-year class? Is that a full year? Is it an eight, you know, how the setup of that class really would...
Just so you guys, if you want to look in the right direction, it's Dr. Kat, K-A-T. She's been on Newsday. She's been on everything. She's the guru in guidance counselor, SAT. She actually created a web-based program. That was the one that we piloted here. And I had an opportunity to meet with her. I would start with her because she's been on like every newsreel that there is when it comes to guidance. But she has some step-by-step programs to make kids successful, like to help them understand what's their safe college, what's their challenge, and what, and when you say like financial, what you need to do, how you need to prepare for an interview when you go for college, not just the essay writing, but all the little things that even like a parent. And the program was nice because it, as you went through the sessions, it emailed the parent at the same time.
Oh, that's right.
And kept the parent on track. Because it really, it's educating the parent just as much as it is the child, if not
especially
more.
If it's their first job going through, it's a whole new world.
It's
FAFSA.
Exactly. All those fun forms. But you could look there for just some information.
We subscribe to Naviance, which also
correct.
Is a great
right.
program
yeah.
and does yeah. all of those with fit for college, and that's all we already pay for them. It's in place as well.
Do we know for those kids that do take like the formal SAT prep or ACT prep, what the improvement is? So I mean, if you put a class like this in place, what are we doing? What should we expect?
The research says it's 100 points.
Translates into what is it?
If they had 900, they'd get 1,000. That's basically what they say. If there's from not preparation to preparation, if you do it the right way, you should see an increase in score around 100.
And does that take you to the whole next level, college or?
Depends on the college.
Most of it doesn't show much,
right.
a lot of movement
yeah.
actually.
And does it help?
It doesn't show a lot of movement. What actually does show the most movement is consistent reading and math. It really, a lot of the SAT prep has not been shown to move.
See, I don't see it. I don't think you all, maybe I'm wrong.
Scale too much.
That's more teaching to the test. And I would think that the elective course that all of you are looking at about, you know, enriching our students educationally, yes, I would be prepared better, I'm sure, through that class. But that would be my one concern that, you know, well, I can raise you 100 points, you'll forget everything the month after. You know, I don't know if that would be the thrust of it. We have our elective program here,
mm-hmm.
you know. If students come to a certain course more than the others, you know, I always talk about adding American Sign Language, and I know you're all sick of hearing me say that I'm going to keep pushing, and every year, and even Latin, those two is what I've pushed. But we haven't gotten them in yet. The question is, when you open something, will the students go there and draw away from something else? To add another elective, that's when you would say an FTE, you know, elective, and then it has to fit in students' schedules. So when you're doing the master schedule, that also happens. But I think that's what you're envisioning more, right? Am I wrong?
It's also, I mean, to expose them to the ACT questions, SAT questions in advance as well. So
yeah.
I mean, for some students, if that's perhaps the only option they have, they can download the SAT the first time. You know, research shows that the more exposure you have,
it's to get that 100 points. I mean, isn't
right.
that
yeah.
It,
so it's not that it would just be teaching to the test, but it gives exposure to students who wouldn't otherwise have it at the same time. And because it's not, you know, it can be made into anything with the class, you know, anything we wanted it to look like. So if
yeah.
you were focusing more, and again, it's going to be a work in progress, if we're focusing more on the wrong thing, can be kind of modified,
yeah.
but it's just to give them exposure to those things. Allow students who really want to or need to dive further into the college essay writing experience
yeah.
the opportunity to do that outside of, you know, a class where they have to cover a certain amount of curriculum and they're shoving in the essay writing portion into that.
I guess I'd like to see, as we go through this, and you know, for specifically the first proposal, and I don't know how you do it for the second, but there's got to be data in from other districts of growth, beginning to end. You know, we took these, if it's 100 points, that's greater, whatever it is. West Hampton has X to Y, here's their growth, you know. And then what that means from a college acceptance perspective.
Because, for example, you look at either one as an additional section, or two, comparing and contrasting, so you said, the other ones that are there, whether this would be more beneficial for students compared to
I mean, I would lean a lot on Mr. Caswell. I know myself as a principal, and I know you, Mr. Caswell, as I've been a principal where this was implemented, and I think Oyster Bay, if you look at just Google in Oyster Bay, the council there wrote all the books on this, I think he's probably a real expert on it, but I know I've seen it implemented, and I've seen it, as Mrs. Turkington would say, leave my school that I worked at, and it was sad, but it was something that went because students could do it on their own outside, and it kind of fell by the wayside. I don't know, Mr. Caswell, if you want to add, because I'm sure
Many experiences in different districts where districts pay for capital to come in at night, parents pay for capital at night. There's many different ways to go about it, but it boils down to it's not a requirement graduation, and it falls on the responsibility of the student and the parents to continue to push the students to prepare themselves for these exams. I would love to have this. I'd love to have sign language. Heck, I'd love to have a lot of things in this school. You know? I mean, really, but unfortunately, you're push and pull of the budget has been a sobering reality.
Yeah. But what this does is gives us, I mean, it makes us start thinking now, is what we're offering, because when you have a curriculum committee that's, you know, presenting tonight, I look at that and go, okay, I know we'll do probably the AC tomorrow, say, okay, what do we have and what are the students benefiting? First, mandatory and non-mandatory electives. And I know I learned from Mr. Soto very quickly that there are a lot more mandated electives because of graduation requirements that I couldn't believe how many there were when we started looking at it with the staffing presentation. But when the curriculum, I hear exactly what you're saying, I think it is something that we should probably speak about at AC to see. This will have more students will go. I know it's a little bit of a push, but you would think there are more students that would go to college or a better college.
Yeah. I think at 100 points being a college professor, 100 points makes a huge difference. The difference between getting into college, getting into a state school, getting into a four-year private school, getting into an Ivy League. So those kind of points can make a big difference. It can make a break getting into your reach school. And from a marketing perspective, I think it's great for some regions to show that, hey, look at the number of students that went to these schools. Look, some went to Harvard. Look, some went to Boston College. That looks good for the district, not just South Bay, not just not those are bad, but it's good to have those four-year freshmen in the Ivy League also.
Yeah. I mean, I guess we would get to see if we actually offered it, who would take it. Because I would wonder how many students are actually getting into already their REACH school. Are they comfortable? I know a lot more students are going to Suffolk Community College because of financial reasons, and we've pushed the Excelsior program. Probably one of the biggest things we've done here is those college credits through the Excelsior program because they're going to Suffolk. And the SAT gets you a scholarship in community college? Maybe. Right. Yeah.
Well, that financial, then that's the reality
of the circumstance, but it's not that they couldn't get there. We just see that number. I hear you, and absolutely. We want them to have opportunities, right? It's going to Suffolk. If more are going there, the problem is, in a sense, that they don't need the SAT to get into Suffolk Community College. That's a fact, right? I can get in without doing that. Therefore, why do I take that? Why do I take that course? Not that it's not, don't get me wrong, more options. I want every student. I guess the big question would be how many kids would take it? Let's see.
What's the finance? So what would you spend over, how many kids would you be spending the money across? Is that the question?
Depends how many students. Is that what Mr. Stewart is saying? His question is how many students?
We know the cost of an FTE,
right,
but we don't know how many children will go. And we can't mandate them to go to it, correct?
And we had declining numbers, I know.
Right. When we offer the course, it would be in the catalog, and then students, when they sign up for their electives.
Many parents come to us saying that our kids need help.
feedback? Do we get feedback from East Merchants parents on the programs that we've got versus others when they're making that decision? Because this could also be something kind of to the extent we've got another program, we can be more competitive and.
The only survey we've done is actually with the 8th graders coming into 9th grade of why they chose what they chose. We found Legacy to be incredibly high up there because we had gotten such a great percentage at one point in time. We said, well, could we go to the next level? And then when we actually scrutinized the students, every single one of them, we found out Legacy.
Legacy meaning?
Yeah, it wasn't a laptop that you give me. It wasn't an ACT, SAT course. I'm all for it, though, by the way. I hope I'm not coming across like I'm not for it. But 40% of the kids might not even be interested off the bat because they might say, Mr. Stewart, throw another elective for Excelsior in there because we want to get it, So we have to kind of
Out, right, how
I love it. I look at it. I don't like it just for the points. There's a part to me that just bothers me, inherently just bothers me that we would do it just for a kid to get points. But that's what they do, I guess, when you take the course. So maybe I'm, maybe I'm reading it wrong, but...
Did you have a question? I see your hand up.
Yes. I'm part of the curriculum committee too, and with, I was pushing it early on. If my son is going to this right now, so I'm like the parent really want to talk to because he is the high achieving kid. He just went interview for Harvard, interview for Dartmouth. He's going to Florida Stony Brook, the whole three schools and everything. He had to write 11 essays. Not one, I took 11. Each one had their own thing. Yeah. And they throw at you with
the most routine thing. So it's super challenging. It's not enough. And he's a brilliant writer and he's struggling. Yeah. So kids who are not, that's his
forte.
That's
what
he's writing his thing, and that's what he wants to do. And he just struggled. Right. And I was helping more, and he gave it to teachers to me, but he would have, I think, benefited
from more direction.
But they were working in a class with him on that.
No.
If they were,
I'm
saying.
Yeah.
If they were.
Yeah,
no, that makes sense.
Right. Because it's really, it's 150 words, 11
They all
have a different question. Comment after, then you have all the rest. Yeah. Yeah. Really something that they would all benefit from is sometimes 100 points coming up in teachers. They world of difference.
Yeah.
And the essays a big deal on right now. Every competitive school will tell you it's their voice. There's a bunch of kids coming up
in
the same sort of bracket that they have.
Yeah.
In the school ranking. But it's the essay that really pushes over. And it's been stressed in every single school that we've gone to.
I just love the one thing you had said. I'm sorry. I am absolutely in agreement. But one thing you were all saying before about one of your other enrichment activities was it was for all the students.
Mm-hmm.
And that was important to me because it wasn't just the higher achieving students.
Right.
And I keyed in on that, and I thought that was good. I worry. I'm just going to say that we're 40% of the kids off the bat, this will not be something that they'll want to take unless we could make it something that they'd want to take. Maybe. Maybe we could do a survey and try to find out what the senior parents think, but I just think.
Are you saying that 40% of the students don't want to get fed because they're not going to college, or is it because they won't take the students?
They don't need it. It's not something, and Mr. Castle, you can correct me if I'm wrong. I'm talking from a perspective of a student, and maybe I'm wrong, but I don't know. Would you agree with me there that 40% of the students might, and I could be wrong, not take this course because it's not relevant in their life?
Yeah.
No, because that doesn't mean you're saying that's a bad thing. I would say some of us, depending, have to look at both sides.
No, but it's our job to give the students, every student in this district, the opportunity to go as far as he or she wants to go. And that's what this is. It's giving, as I'm listening to this, the opportunity to go further. Maybe they don't choose to take that next step and go to the four-year school, but they've now got this tool to grow and have a better chance to get there.
When you say a tool, again, I could be wrong, but 100 points on an SAT, which that's the goal of the class, and if the test itself means nothing to me when I go to Suffolk Community College, I wonder if there's a better course that would be better for my child. I could be wrong. That'd be better for my child instead of taking an SAT. Now, what I would say to you, if it's an elective and only one section goes, that would be great because it's the 29 students that this would help. Like your child, it would absolutely help. So can we offer it?
This helps her.
My niece is on the other end. She's the total opposite. I'm in there changing her schedule because she's making decisions that probably aren't the best for her.
And I'm a parent that will go in there and say, no, you need that. Last year when she did her schedule, she took all these classes, did it, and I found out that you can take Spanish, you can get for 5 years, and you can get 3 kinds of college credits. Right. She didn't want to take it. But I'm not making her, let her make that decision.
No, but how does this help? I'm just curious. Explain to me, because maybe I'm missing it. How does this help the student that wants to, 40% of our children, going to Suffolk Community College? I just want to know, and I could be wrong, how does it help that child?
Because you're having them settled, saying that they are going to Suffolk, when they can be doing something else.
So you think those children, are not getting into other colleges?
We're giving them the opportunity to go further. Ms. Rasso?
I absolutely think that. I absolutely think we have kids graduating saying not going to Suffolk. Yes. Because they don't realize they can get into a four-year school. They don't realize that there is financially available because they don't have
right.
We need to give them tools. I think we can do better, and I think we have to look at
that. That makes sense.
In every stage, I think we need to weigh every dollar that we're spending. I don't mean to step on you, but I agree with what you're saying. I think we need to weigh every dollar that we're spending and say, how can we most efficiently spend that money to grow our program?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying that we're going to, you know, but that's what we have to do. Yes.
I just want to say that anything would be a great boost for their, you know, their self-esteem. But my kids would not be taking it. I want them to. They're going to Suffolk. I have 4 kids. We pay for 2 years. Then they go where they want, unless they get a full scholarship somewhere. But it's a money thing. I don't want them starting off their life with financial aid, with a loan. I don't want them getting out of college and only $80,000. No, I agree. I think it's a great idea. But you have to see who's going for what reason.
And we're acting as though, some people are acting as though that's just settling or not knowing
not
where
settling.
They can go. And I speak to many kids, in East Islip who, they're going to Suffolk because they can't afford it. Their parents are like, you don't know what you want to do exactly. You're going to get your core credits when you're there. It's not an opt-out. It's not a, I'm not trying to attain more. It's a valid opportunity for them to go to community colleges. And we, East Islip is a higher achieving school than this, according to grades, and we still have 50% of our students going.
Sometimes it's not a financial. You talk about debt. Right now, college debt is one of the biggest things that they're discussing out there. I know my sister went to Nassau Community College, but she's an oncologist now. But she didn't go to Nassau for really any other reason but for the right,
for the finance and the money.
Well, because then it could transfer into another college and so on. So, again, I think we should, Mr. Caswell, one of the things we could do is maybe speak to the students, too, and even their parents, and say, okay, if we offered this course, would you take it? And if you did take it, what would it replace in your schedule? And then maybe we get a feel that way, and if we had a certain amount of parents, you know, it's definitely something that's good.
Mm-hmm.
Please don't get me wrong. True.
This is an opportunity for students.
You're right.
It's
not necessarily
piece.
To get into college, but essay writing is good for people throughout their entire life. It's more of an expression. There's nothing. You can't go wrong by teaching your students to be better writers or giving them, you know, more difficult math or more difficult vocabulary. Other things that are on, and we're doing vocabulary.com, and we get to high school, a big part of SAT is vocabulary.
Right.
So it's still an extension of the curriculum. So it's just offering for students who don't have present opportunities.
I like the extension of the curriculum. I'm still going to worry about going to learn how to take that exam, and that's my focus. That would just be me for my child. I want to know what
you're doing. In an optimal world, I agree with you that you don't want to teach to a test, but when this test and these numbers are what is looked at by a college, sometimes you have to play the game.
They're going to be finished.
Ms. Maron, did you have a question? Did you have a question? I saw your hand up. Mm-hmm. You had your hand up.
And
and that's what we're sort of presenting to you as the board and administration, and saying fill in that slot. And you know, the Jeopardy is lovely, and that can be a one-night event, but we're looking for to be at kids at both ends of the spectrum, and we seem to be doing a very good job of being kids at one end of the spectrum, but I wanted to just as well, and it's tied into teachers at UPR, who want the cohorts to move on every end. So yeah, we're looking at what are we doing today, and that's honestly what I see. And then even with the essay, we have art and go-sees for kids that don't want to go to college. Now the kids that really do want to go to college now will have this. So that's what I think as a community that we were looking at, is that blank end on the opposite. And of course there's budgetary considerations, but that's why we're kind of asking you, we have these ideas, here are some of them, what can we do to meet kids at the other end of the spectrum, to offer up extra.
There's really a lack of opportunity for those students. I mean, as a parent of one of them, I spend lots of money sending them outside because there's no opportunities here for students like that. And I know because of state regulations, we are forced to pay attention to the students that have special needs. But the kids at the top have special needs too. They're just as important. Yeah. And
some of our special needs students are at the top though as well.
Yeah. Incorrect. Is there a state regulation that there has to be a gifted program for fourth grade and above?
No.
My psychologist at the school that I work for.
You're good.
Just to make sure you know I'm here.
That's what my psychologist at the school that I work in had told me 2 years ago.
There is no requirement to have a gifted and talented program. No.
Larry, did you have a question?
Just, I don't understand why there would be any hesitation to do something to raise the students' SAT scores. They are going to be faced their entire life with certain tests, where it's okay to teach for that test, where you have to take it once and you'll never take it again. Mm-hmm. From your driving exam to real estate licenses, the life insurance, the EPA exam. I mean, if nothing else, you're preparing them for on how to take a high-stakes test, which many of them, no matter what they do college-wise, will be doing later in life.
So that's what I remember is, and mind you, I took a prep class in 77, which is quite a few years back. But it was how to take the test. It really wasn't how to study for the test. It was how to take the test. And I actually, it benefited me. And it was also to expose you to it so you weren't so stressed when you went into it. And I actually took what I learned in that, and I helped a couple people study for the ACT, not the SAT, and these were people that were scared to death to take the test, and I'm not a teacher, but the people I helped, I taught them how to take a test, and they all did very well. That's the key to it, is to teach them, I think. Now, this is aside from the essay writing, because that is such a critical skill that we need to teach, but the SAT and the ACT prep is, we need to teach our kids how to take the test. It's not so much, here's what's maybe on the test, here's how the questions might be formulated. Here's how to take this test. And you know what? That can follow through into tests in a lot of subjects throughout your entire academic career. So, if we might actually be able to solve that one within the framework of regular classes. Now, the essay writing thing, that's well above that in my opinion.
English classes.
I
thought it was English classes, essay writing. I mean, just the writing, that should be incorporated into our English classes.
So I think the takeaway is, and we've got a lot of presentations, I think the takeaway is, I know the curriculum committee has done an enormous amount of work. Are you done with your presentation?
Yeah, I just wanted to end by kind of just thanking the board and just offering to anybody else that's here tonight that's not a part of the curriculum committee that wants to be.
None of them want, they don't want
to. I know you guys.
It's over, you're not getting any members. You're going to lose members.
I know that you guys have done an enormous amount of work. I've seen it.
Thank you.
Immensely appreciated. B, I tend to agree that we need to expand our programs. We need to grow, and we need to do better. And I think we can do better. I think we can get from good to great. So with your data and your backup, and we can kind of put some numbers on this throughout the next 2 months of the budget process, in making those tough decisions as to our students using the electives that we've got, can we pay for others? Can we add?
And also, I think,
while
I'm
still staying within our goals.
To everybody, perhaps this meeting kind of opens up the door for more conversations as to, like you alluded to, Mr. Stewart, other ways that we can do it. Like Mr. Unger was just speaking about familiarity with the test, right, and the different sections, like what does an SAT look like, format, looking at past tests. I know when I was studying, I did a private class, and I had a big red book that I got at Barnes & Noble that was just filled with SATs, and I just took practice SATs. And I think, you know, perhaps we can add, I think what Mr. Unger said is so important about the familiarity with the test, and perhaps this just came to me now, but what if that looks like an advisorship? You know, we spoke about just K-8. What if that looks like an advisorship at the high school, and instead of an elective, the advisorship was devoted to having meetings every other week related to familiarity with the test, college essay writing. You know, I just think that this just opens the door, because I think we're all going to be having conversations on how to implement this in other ways. So.
No, I think that's great. I think one of the things that we've kind of talked about and thought about, at least in my mind a little bit, is where do we want to go? How do we want to get there? Not, you know, in the spring or next year, but over the next 5 years. What do you see Center Merch's as? How do you want to get there? And kind of drawing that out. We've laid out our budget goals for 5 years. We're working on a 5-year maintenance plan. You know, and it's a 5 or 10 year plan to say what types of programs we want to want. How do we pay for those? Where do we sacrifice? Because when you cut, it's a sacrifice to grow. And where do we want to grow? Are we growing in those areas that will help every kid, or are we properly servicing each individual group of kids? So, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. So the next presentation is staffing presentation.
Yeah, the Board of Education, and I just want to start by many of you that were not here the last time or a couple times ago, I can't remember, a few meetings ago, the Board of Education requested administration to kind of change around the way we do the budget as far as month by month. And even tonight, at the end of the presentation, Board, I'm going to be asking you, what next? Where do you want to go next? What I will say about doing staffing early, it's so fluid. We have to be extremely careful. And I'm almost nervous to even throw off any of the slides that are going to be presented tonight, because this is stupid. How can you be speaking about staffing in January, knowing that we all just watched what Governor Cuomo has done, and you don't even have your computerized state runs to understand financially and project financially how you're going to move forward? So that's why I do hesitate. I believe the governor is going to have it in our hands by April 1st, Board. That's my opinion. I think he's held true the last several years. But I know when Ms. Perkins was standing next to the fax machine last week waiting for that to come out, because we knew the date it comes out, and it didn't come out. And the governor tied it into some other pieces saying, well, you will get this if you do this. And once he did that, the numbers did not come out for us. I'm not sure if they ever will, because some of the things were tied into the ADPR and teachers' growth scores at a 50% and things of that nature. So, you know, so I'm a little hesitant tonight, but we are going to move forward with the staffing, with the understanding that it is a fluid document. It is a snapshot of where we see it right now. The board who controls the budget, I'm sure, are going to tweak it as we go along from now all the way until May. So I just wanted everybody to hear that. These are assumptions by us at this point in time. I can't thank, and I'm going to embarrass you a little, I cannot thank Mr. Soto enough of taking the lead. He's done the lion's share of this work, of working with all of us in the buildings and at district office, asking a lot of questions until he came with the what you're going to see here. Did you hand this out to the board, or would you rather them over here, Ricardo? Do they have a copy of this in front of them?
You do, but you actually have, what they have is a copy that was submitted to the Board of Education on Friday of last week. It's a very similar presentation. There's only a couple of modifications that were made. So you may actually want to sit so that...
Yeah,
you know,
I would suggest the board just come sit out here. You'll be able to see it better. So, Mr. Soto, we'll take any questions at the end, would you say? Just so, because
sure.
I know it's getting late already. So we're going to go through this, and I know you're going to get it done, what, 15 minutes or so? Come on, Mr. Soto, you can do it.
I don't know. I will definitely try. All right, good evening, everyone. Thank you, Mr. Stewart, for the introduction. I'm looking at the enrollment staffing considerations that we're going to present this evening to the Board of Education and the community for consideration for the 2015-2016 budget cycle. The first slide that we're going to look at is the elementary school. And the way I sort of designed this presentation is looking at each building and looking at sort of the FTEs of each building. So initially looking at Clint Huey Elementary School, I wanted to sort of project, looking at the projection for the 15-16 school year in terms of student enrollment, I think it's a good idea to look at the last 6 years. As you can see, in 2010, we had 710 students at Clint Huey Elementary School. The following year, we increased that enrollment by 42 students, and then we saw a decline by 39, and then once again by 14, and then last year by 12. Looking at the projection study that was conducted by the Western Suffolk BOCES, they are projecting that our kindergarten class, which this year it's currently at 103 students, is going to increase next year to 112. So, once again, this is only a projection. Things can change. We actually, what's interesting about kindergarten is that we actually don't really know what the total numbers will be until sometime in August. We actually get a lot of late enrollment at that time. So, once again, Western Suffolk BOCES is projecting our kindergarten class at 112, which brings our total projected enrollment next year at 690, which is an increase of 3 students from this year. Now, looking at Clint Huey, I think it's a good idea to look at each grade and to look at the current sections that we're offering, the current amount of sections, and the current enrollment. So just to kind of look at this spreadsheet that you have in front of you, which is going to follow sort of the middle school and high school as well. The first column you're going to see is obviously the grade. The second column is the total enrollment currently. So in kindergarten, we currently, as I mentioned a moment ago, have 103 students. In first grade, we have 111. Second, 120. Third grade, 126. Fourth grade, 118. And fifth grade, 109. What we do is that, looking at that general enrollment, we do take out students that receive that are currently enrolled in a special class, which is a self-contained classroom, and then we have the general education number. So looking at kindergarten, we have a total of 103. 3 students happen to be in one of our self-contained classrooms, either 1211 or 811, which are the 2 self-contained classrooms that we run across the district. So that brings our total enrollment at 100. We are currently running 5 sections, which is the next column over, that reads 2014-15. In first grade, we're also running 5 sections, in second, 5, in third, 5, in fourth, 5, and currently this year, we're running 4 sections in grade 5. Now, the next column looks at the average size per class. Now, the next column looks at the rollover enrollment. So if you take grade 1, and in terms of the general education, which is the 4th column over, and you bring it down to those particular students that will be in second grade next year, you're looking at an overall enrollment for that particular class in general education classrooms at 109. And I'm trying to speak as quickly as I can because I know I have a 15-minute marker. So, okay, so we also had 1 DCT class per grade. And I'm going to speak to what that really means for us as a district. Brings us to the next column, which is the average projected class sizes per grade, and also gives us what is called total seats. Contractually, the Santa Maria's Teachers Association has within their contract the fact that we cannot go beyond 29 students for each elementary classroom. With the exception of DCT, which is our direct consultant teacher classroom, which is a classroom that is sort of co-taught within a general education teacher as well as a special education teacher at the time, those classes can only be 25, which brings our total seats, if we're running five sections, to 141 students. Now, if we're running four sections, it brings our total to 112. So the last column that you see, which reads empty seats, those are the number of students that we have available within each grade if we run these projected enrollments and what are the recommended section numbers for each grade. So looking at, I'll just give you an example, looking at what is projected for kindergarten, we're projecting 107 students in general education classrooms. We're recommending five sections, which brings our average to about 20, 21 students a class. Our total seats will be 141 students, which will mean that we will have 34 empty seats. What I mean by empty seats, it sounds kind of like a negative thing, it's really not, but empty seats is available seats, available students that we can actually enroll in the grade without exceeding the 29 cap that is applicable to the teacher's contract. So,
is there a column that, like, what this would look like if you were at the contract level? You know what I'm saying?
Yes. We actually sat down, Mrs. Stewart and I, with Mrs. Perkins and Mr. Allen, and we did those numbers. Some of these, if you went down, and I'm going to talk about that momentarily, but some of these, if you went down to four.
If you want, right down the PAD Board of Education, across the line with 34 is, to the right of that it would be 27, right, because I want to go one less section what it would look like.
Yeah.
So right now, you asked a great question, Josh. In kindergarten, if you see that, you say, well, Mrs. Stewart, you're recommending 20.5 students in a class, like Ricardo said, 2021. If you went to contractual, could you actually take away a section there? And the answer is yes. So if you went along and made another line to the question that you asked, Josh, it would be 27 next to the 34. Next to the 12, you couldn't do it because it would be a 37. Next to the 32, it would be 28. Next to the 27, it would be 29.6. Next to the 20, it would be 32. And next to the 4, it would be 41.5.
How does, just so that I'm clear, like where you said next to the 20, it would be 32?
Next to the 20, it would be 32.
How does that number go up
if you reduce it to another
section? The average size of the class.
Exactly.
Got it.
So if we reduce kindergarten to four sections, our numbers within each section will naturally go up.
And that's why Board of Education will make recommendations to you, but as it gets towards the end, you'll ask us the educational value of why we would recommend 20 at the kindergarten. And as you know, like my answer back would be where we took out paraprofessionals, and I have not been a kindergarten teacher, but I could not imagine in the kindergarten classes having 27, although contractually you could do it.
We can.
No, I'm not saying that it's a good idea. I'm just trying to understand. Yep. I just wrote down the numbers as you read them.
Yep.
Those numbers that you read are average size per class.
Yes, correct.
Yes.
So the average size, though,
if you took away one FTE from each of those sections across,
right,
those are the numbers you would have.
But why then in kindergarten does it go down from 34 to 27?
No, that's empty seats.
Oh, okay,
empty
gotcha.
Seats.
Empty
seats.
Empty okay, seats. Got it.
One of the things to consider as well, in all of these sections, one section has to remain at 25.
Yeah.
So you could only bring up the other three or four sections to 29. So one of the things that was recommended by the administrative team is to look at, and this is a recommendation once again to the Board of Education. It's up to the board at the time to accept the recommendation or to revisit it once we get closer to sort of the budgeting process. But if, as you can see, the enrollment in kindergarten moving up to first grade next year is relatively small, at 100 students. So if we reduce that number of sections to four, it brings the total count to 25 and still gives us about 20 seats that we can populate with new incoming students coming into the district. The same thing somewhat can be said.
Do you mean 12 seats?
12 seats, yes. You see 12 available seats at the far right corner? Just one of the things that, you know, we want to mention is that this year we have four sections in grade five. We're recommending four sections for grade five again next year, but that does only give us four available empty seats.
And the board asked us at this point in time, this is what I said to the community about it being fluid. Right now, we're looking at retirees. So who has retired or actually handed in their papers to retire next year, and who hasn't? Last year, we had a lot of retirees. So at this point in time last year, which was actually 2 or 3 months later, we were fighting for that grade four. Again, at this point in time, this is just what we see now. It's a snapshot in January, and our recommendations might change as we move forward.
Absolutely. So bringing the total classroom FTEs or recommended classroom FTEs is 28, which is a reduction from this year by one FTE. The special education numbers are right below that. What I did is looked at the K-5 enrollment in our DCT, which is Direct Consultant Teacher Program, and our 12-1-1 classrooms, as well as the 8-1-1 classroom. We do see somewhat of a reduction in numbers, but it doesn't necessarily change the program FTEs that are needed to run these specific programs. In K-5, in terms of DCT, we do run DCT at the K-1 level for half the day, and at the 1-5 grades, we run it full day. So a student is at the elementary school for 6 hours a day. 45 minutes is dedicated to a lunch, and 45 minutes is dedicated to a special. So the other 4.5 hours is dedicated to instructional time, and we feel that as classified students, they need as much support as possible. So we do support them for the entire day in grades 1-5. So in terms of special education, the FTEs are not changing from 14-15, or the recommended FTEs are not changing from 2014-15 to 2015-16. And the reason why I put mandated FTEs based on special education continuum and state regulations is that if we are running a program and a student is recommended for that program, we have one of two options, which is to place the student in that program or to unfortunately send the student out of district for that program. So that's what I mean by mandated. Now looking at Clayton Hugh Elementary School in terms of the total staffing outside of sort of the classroom FTEs, I looked at all of the staff that are sort of allocated to the building. So we have one building principal, which is a mandate. I should have actually put the asterisk there, an assistant principal. We currently have 3 academic intervention service workers, which we're recommending to remain the same for next year. We have 1 art teacher, and I'm just going to stop right now for a second because I do have an asterisk next to art, music, physical education, and that's about it. Based on state education mandates in terms of regulations as to how a school must regulate their instruction, we are mandated by the New York State Department of Education to offer students education in art, music, as well as physical education. We are mandated to offer students 120 minutes a week of physical education, and like I said, we are mandated to offer music and art as well. So those positions, in terms of us running a elementary building that is sort of adheres to New York State regulations, those positions are mandated. Now, we do have a behavior consultant that is K-12, so we've allotted a 0.33 to that behavior consultant to the elementary school, and one of the things that she does is she provides behavior support for students and teachers in terms of how to manage students that or exhibiting aberrant behavioral tendencies. It's also the creation, she works on the creation of FBAs, which is functional behavior assessments, as well as BIPs, which is behavior intervention, behavior intervention programs as well. So it is something that isn't mandated, but it's something that we definitely get a lot of use out of. The librarian, we do have one at the elementary building. One of what the mandates do say is that we are mandated to have a library at the elementary, but not necessarily a librarian. I mean, it does state that the library should be kept, and there is a mandate as to how many books should be available at the library. So once again, that's not an attribute, it's not one of the mandates, but it is something that obviously we do see a tremendous amount of educational value in. Paraprofessionals, we do have a decline in paraprofessionals from 28 to 27, and I apologize, I skipped English language learners. So let me stop for a moment to speak to that. This year, we saw a change in what is called the Part 154 regulations. The Part 154 regulation speaks to how a school district is obligated to provide instruction to English language learners. So up to prior to this year, we were able to group students, to group ESL students together, not necessarily based on grade. So what we were able to do is group students that required the support in a first that might have been in first grade with a student that was in third grade. The state, as of this year, with the changes, with the amendment to the Part 154 regulations, says you can't do that any longer. As of 2015, they're expecting districts to go to full implementation. Now, once again, it's a regulation, but it's an unfunded mandate. The state is telling us that we have to do this, but they're not necessarily increasing our allocation to fund this new regulation. So what this means to us is that at the elementary level, we can only group two grades at one time. That's what the regulations now state, that as of 2015, you could only group two grades at a time. So meaning at the elementary level, we can only group K-1 and then have another grouping of 2-3 and have another grouping of 4-5. The same thing is going to exist at the middle and high school level. Once again, this is something very new. This is something that just came about this year. And I have to say a lot of districts I know for a fact are scrambling to try to factor in budgetary-wise how they are going to manage this regulation. Because for some districts, it can mean upwards to 8-10 additional teachers, depending on how many ESL students they have within their population. Okay. Physical education doesn't change as well. Reading teachers, we have allocated 2.4. This year, we're hoping to get the same allocation for next year. A school nurse, let me kind of stop to speak to that as well. A school nurse, even though the position itself isn't mandated within a building, there are certain things that are, such as health services. Health services can include medical examinations provided to students at no cost. A school district is obligated, is mandated to provide students with a medical examination. The management of records in terms of immunization. Students are obligated to receive immunizations prior to entering school, unless they have religious exemption. So we have to have someone in-house that manages that for us, that alerts the building principals in each building as to whether or not a student or parent is in compliance. In addition to that, there are the dispensing of medication. Unless you are a medical professional, we cannot dispense medication. There are some students that attend each building that require dispensing of medication every single day. Even though the position itself isn't mandated, the state has sort of gotten around that to say that there are certain things that a school district must do.
So we
do have two. One is actually dedicated to a student. Okay. We do have a student at the elementary school that has a one-to-one nurse. And the other one is actually just the building nurse. School psychologists, one of the reasons why I put that is mandated, there are certain things that a committee on special education must have present. When we're conducting meetings, there are certain meetings that you have to have a school psychologist for. And one is if you're reviewing an evaluation of a student, you have to have a school psychologist present. And the second one is if you're reviewing the recommendation of a student that is going from an environment to a more restrictive environment. So if you're making a recommendation for a student that may need additional support, the presence of a school psychologist is necessary. So this is why I sort of put the two asterisks to explain that it is a mandated position. Now, that brings our total FTEs in terms of total direct contact FTEs to 86.5, which is a reduction from last year by 1.4 FTEs. Okay. Now, looking at the additional support personnel in terms of our clericals, custodians, grounds, maintenance, the lunch monitors and security, we are not projecting any changes in any of those areas. So our total FTEs in terms of total additional support FTEs is 22. Now looking at the middle school. The middle school, what's interesting about the middle school, when you look at the enrollment over the course of 6 years, it has changed quite a bit. And that, I think, is really due to some of the bubble classes that we had that went through the elementary school and eventually, you know, moved to the middle school. As you can see, in 2010, we had an enrollment of 359 students. We increased that by 13 students the following year. Then we increased that by 14. We decreased it by 4. We decreased it again by 12. And we're decreasing it this year by 24. Now, but when you look at 2010 to 2015, the similarities are only a 13 student difference. Now, once again, these are just projections as of when I did this report last week. Things can change. Now, looking at sort of the same thing as what we looked at for the elementary building, the class sizes in terms of for the grades 6 through 8, we're looking at this year in 6th grade, 111 students, in 7th grade, 123, and in 8th, 136, which brings our classroom FTEs to 15. Next year, as we looked at in 5th grade, it is a small class. It is 96 students that are within the general education population. So if we did reduce, if the Board of Education decided to accept this recommendation and reduce that grade to 4 sections, our average class size would be 23.67, which, once again, brings up the vacant seats to 4, and let me kind of speak to that. At the secondary complex, the the amount of students that is allowed within the CMTA contract is not 29. There's language in the contract that states that to the best of our ability, we should try to keep the classes at 25. And that's what we try to do. So this cap is based on 25 students, which the maximum seats is not 141, but is actually 125. And it's not 112, but it's actually 100, based on a 4-section ratio.
So what were the numbers on the first page when we looked at Clayton that you compiled? Was it based on 25 or 29?
These are based on 25, with the exception of DCT classrooms. 29, excuse me. So the one DCT class is 25, and the other sections are 29. That's, once again, that's what their contract states.
Okay.
Now, what we have done in the past is that we actually, years ago, created an MOA to allow us to go beyond the 25 at a compensation to the teacher for every student beyond 25. So that is something to factor in as well. So we have 4 students, but we can go beyond 4 up to 29, but we do have to compensate the teachers as a result of that. That is built within their contract.
And if you went to the right of it, if you had one less, the same as the other, one less FTE, to the right of number 4 right there, it would be a 35.45. Below that would be a 26.33, and the last one would be a 28.66. And also, I just want to point out that when you get to that 7th and 8th grade level, it's not such a simplistic mathematical equation, because you have to put it into the master schedule. So it changes, unlike the elementary class, where it's just very simplistic. So I just want to point that out.
Yes, there are, and I'm going to get into that momentarily, but there are some other things that you have to consider when looking at the middle, and it even gets a lot more interesting when you get to the high school. But once again, this is just recommendations based on the enrollment as of today. So we will see a decrease in FTEs, in classroom FTEs, by one FTE if the Board of Education decided to accept this recommendation. Now, looking...
Can you tell us what's that number cost per student to go into the MOA?
It is...
Is it 205? Mm-hmm. I didn't hear that,
Carol. What did you say? I believe it's about $244.
So you go from 25 to 29,
yes.
And spend
250. So if you go to 29, it's roughly about $1,000.
So just in the example for seventh grade, if you went, and what was the math there? That
we went to 26.33. Now that doesn't mean you can't do that. We're making every effort, like Ricardo said, Mr. Soto, sorry, to stay under that. Going to the 26.33 at this moment in time, we talked about it at this snapshot, we didn't feel comfortable putting it up there at this point. As we move forward, that might change. What we did say is, well, we have one less section, and we went back to the amount of students in there, going from a 370 to a 346 in the school. It kind of made sense where you have, you know, this amount of students less and one less teacher. So it kind of made sense to us.
And once again, these are numbers that we may have to revisit with the Board of Education, but right now, this is what we currently have. As Mr. Stewart mentioned, this is just a snapshot as of today. In special education, actually the enrollment per program that we offer at the middle school level is actually increasing next year. So right now we have 7 FTEs, meaning full-time teachers. And FTEs, I'm sorry, stand for full-time equivalent. I'm so accustomed to kind of using this kind of language, I apologize for that. But an FTE is a full-time equivalent. That means one buyer, one person. So right now we have 7 FTEs, special education FTEs, allotted to the middle school. Next year we're projecting the same amount based on enrollment projections. All right, now looking at the middle school in terms of the overall staffing, we have one principal allotted to the middle school. Once again, that is a mandate. New York State Department of Education mandates that you have to have a building principal per building. So that is a mandate.
Let me just correct that, make sure, unless I'm clear. We could have one principal for the secondary complex.
You can.
Correct.
Okay. But you have to identify it as one building.
Correct.
Right now, we're identifying it as the elementary, Plain Fury Elementary School, Center Bridges Middle School, and Center Bridges High School. We actually have 3 BET codes, which is the way the state identifies the district in those 3 codes.
Okay.
Right now, we have 1 AIS, Academic Intervention Service Worker, at the elementary. And let me kind of speak to the asterisk. I'm not going to really speak to the Part 154 because it is redundant in terms of what I said a moment ago. But when you look at art, family, consumer science, librarian, languages other than English, music, as well as technology. When the state identifies the regulations that is applicable to teaching students at the what they call the intermediate level, the state identifies sort of 4 levels in education. One is pre-K to K, and then the other one is actually 1 through 6, and this actually speaks to 7-8. And then the rest is high school 9 through 12. So these regulations, it is very clear from the regulations that we actually have to offer a 0.25, which is a quarter of a class to all 7th and 8th graders of art. In family consumer science, we have to actually offer 3/4 of what they describe as a unit of study in family and consumer science. In languages other than English, by the end of 8th grade, you have to offer 1 unit of study, which is a full year class in languages other than English. I'm going to talk to the librarian momentarily. In music, you have to offer a semester, which is a 0.5 in music. And you also have to offer 1 unit of technology, So there is no way of sort of getting around these regulations. We have to offer it to all 7th and 8th graders. This is why the asterisk on the side states that these positions are mandated by SED regulations. Now, in terms of a guidance counselor, I just want to kind of speak to that as well. The state also mandates that we have to do two things. One, we have to develop what is called a guiding program, and we have to implement that guidance program. And that has to be created and implemented for grades, for all students in grades 7 through 12. And the guidance program speaks to helping kids develop career plans, helping students that may be struggling with grades, with attendance issues, with discipline issues. So these positions are mandated in a sense because we have to run this program. And there are certain specifics to the regulations that state that these aspects of the program must be run by a guidance counselor. And librarian. At the secondary complex, language states that if you have a secondary complex that is more than 500 but less than 1,000, you have to have a full-time librarian. Actually, in grade 7 and 8, the librarian should be working with each class at least once a week. So that is why at the secondary complex, the librarian is a mandated position. It's a media specialist, which is what the state identifies it as. In terms of paraprofessionals, we are going up one, and that's just due to the fifth graders moving up to sixth grade.
Mr. Soto, I'm so
yes.
sorry, because you just used the terminology secondary, and then before we were using middle school, high school.
Yes.
So for the librarian, they're mandated to be in a middle school?
Yes.
Secondary, so that's why I'm asking.
Of course, of course.
Secondary seven.
The reason why I kind of grouped the two together, because they do share the library.
Right.
So this library is shared by the middle and high school. So in, you know, when you look at it like that logistically, this is a secondary library. So it's not, this library is not dedicated solely to the high school, nor is it dedicated solely to the middle school. So we have to view it in that sort of vantage point. And in terms of, if the mandate exists in grades 7 and 8 for the 1 hour per week within each class. But at the secondary complex, at the high school.
For 7th and 8th graders, right?
Yes, that's correct. For
sixth, just so they understand, 6th grade is still considered elementary.
Yes, that is correct.
Right. I know it, but I'm sure the other board members know
it. I know.
So 7th and 8th graders, the 1 hour per week.
That is correct. Like I said, the state identifies grades within like four groupings. Pre-K and K, 1 through 6, 7, 8, and then high school, which is 9 to 12. So that's how they identify. But in terms of the librarian, that is a mandate because of the 1 hour per week and because of the fact that the high school and middle school share the library. So this is a secondary complex library. let's see. I spoke to the school nurse as well as the school psychologist. That brings the total FTEs to 30.7. When you add the 14 for the classroom as well as the 7 for the special education, brings the total direct contact FTEs to 51.2. There are no changes that we are recommending for clericals, custodians, grounds, maintenance, or monitors, which is 9. So we're projecting the same count for additional support personnel for next year as well.
What was the total FTE for 14-15? The number that would compare to 51-2?
15-7, 22. What? 15-22 plus a 29.4. It's an overall increase of 0.2. Okay. Now the high school is sort of like a different animal in itself. It really is. This actually took me the longest in terms of just preparing it for the high school. If you look at 2010, the high school has seen significant growth in the last 6 years. As you can see, from 2010 to 2013, when they saw the highest enrollment at 599, next year we're projecting 601 students. That's an increase from 2010 to 2015 by 7% in terms of their population. Now, the same thing that was done for the elementary and middle school, you're looking at the amount of students per grade, the amount of students that are within a special class, such as a self-contained class, the general education enrollment, and the number of sections, and moving that over to next year. So the allotment in total seats is 150 based on six sections that are generally run within the high school. But this is a little misguiding in a sense. So let me kind of explain more in detail what that really means. I thought it was a good idea to look at what we would describe as a typical high school schedule. And that is for students that are in either grades 9 through 11. Grade 12, they change. Because what happens is that when a student goes to grade 12, they don't necessarily need to take a fourth-year math or fourth-year science, even though the Board of Regents is currently contemplating whether or not they should change that. Right now, students are mandated to take 3 units of credit in math and 3 units of credit in science. The Board of Regents, which I think is a great idea, is saying that we want our students to be stronger in math and science, so we want to consider changing it from 3 units to 4 units. But right now, when you're looking at a typical high school student from grades 9 to 12, this is what it looks like. Not necessarily in this order, but this is generally what it looks like. They take one English class, which is usually English 9. They take a social studies class, which is global 9. They take a science, which is usually living environment. Which every science class, living environment, earth science, and chemistry, has a lab component that attaches on to that class, which meets every other day. Usually what the master scheduler does of a high school is they group that lab with a PE class. The mandate at high school is to get a 0.5 unit of credit within PE every single year. They have to take two, they have to have 2 units of credit by the end of 12th grade. So in the next class they would take is a math class. Some of our classes actually have a lab component attached to that as well. We have 2 sections in algebra, we have 2 sections in geometry, and I have to give the high school administration a tremendous amount of credit this year, because this year we have a lab component for algebra 2 trigonometry. And anyone that sort of understands like high school knows that algebra 2 trig is sort of the gateway to an advanced Regents diploma. That is one Regents examination that students need to get that eight Regents exams that would qualify them for advanced Regents diploma. So some of our students are indeed sitting in for a math lab, which is great. So that would mean that that would carry into period 6. That would mean that that would bounce off lunch. Now students are mandated to take 1 unit of credit in a language. We currently offer French and Spanish. So students may want to use language to kind of fulfill the advanced Regents diploma, would take up to 3 credits of a language, take the exiting exam, and that would qualify them for credit within the advanced Regents diploma. The next class that they would take is an elective. The reason that I put mandated is that at the end of 4 years, students must have 3.5 credits of electives to graduate high school. So the one class, which is 1 period 8, is mandated. You can't necessarily get around that. The second class, the second elective, isn't mandated. That is something that the board would have to consider in terms of running a 9-period day. Now, this is what the breakdown looks like for a high school. In terms of the first column is the departments that are offered at high school.
Can you back up just so that I'm clear, and maybe I'm not. Don't we have a 10-period day in high school?
We do. The 10th period is not a mandated class. It is an extra help with study class, in a sense. Not all the students are mandated to attend.
Right.
I believe that a lot of students take advantage of the 10-period extra help because it allows them to review whatever material that they had difficulty, ascertaining throughout the period. It allows them to maybe finish an exam. It allows teachers to kind of reinforce some components.
That doesn't get an extra...
No. It's not part of the. It's part of their contract. It's part of the teacher's contract, but it's not reflective in the child's schedule as well. It's not a full 40 minutes. It's roughly 25, right? It's 25. It goes from 2:00 to 2:25.
Do the kids actually sign in? Like, so the kids that go to sports, for instance, sometimes they're mandated.
They do. Yes. What happens is that if students are struggling in sport, struggling academically. They might be put on probation from, their sports team, and they will be mandated to attend extra help, 10-period extra help, for a certain amount of time to ensure that they get their grades up. Because it's a good way, like I mentioned a moment ago, for students to kind of really, get whatever, they missed during the lesson.
Do we use that, like if we walk through each teacher's class at the end
absolutely.
Of the day, that 10th period,
absolutely.
Like, students in class every day?
Yes, absolutely.
You're going to see it. Well, first of all, just, sports goes after extra help. So I just want to make sure that people don't think we run sports at the same time. And it depends on the season, too. If you look right before a Regents exam, I'm sure your math classes are going to have a lot more students in there.
You would find that the two subjects that are really populated well by students is math and science. Students tend to struggle in those two subject areas, but they do go to social studies, they go to English, they go to language, they go to technology, they go to art if they need to make up on a project, make up a project or they want extra credit. There are a lot of different avenues that teachers employ to ensure that students do well. It is a great, great contractual element of Southern Richard School District. It's something that is very unique to Santa Maria's as well. You don't really have a lot of high schools that offer 10 period as a help period that's sort of built into their day. Now, looking at the departments at the high school, these are the departments that we currently run. The next section looks at the amount of students currently taking all of those particular courses within those departments. The next column looks at the amount of sections that we're running by department. And the fourth column looks at the amount of FTEs, full-time equivalent teachers, that we have allocated to each department. The next column is what we're projecting. Now, I have to stop here because this is sort of almost like a premature presentation at this point, because if I could just explain what the high school scheduling process generally is that about, sometime in December, sometime in January, the high school principal, as well as the guidance counselors, as well as the assistant principal, Mrs. Angolia, they go into classrooms and they make presentations to kids. They go into the 8th grade, they go into the 9th grade, the 10th grade, the 11th grade, and they present what their course offerings will be for the following year. Now, the next step to that is that each student gets a course request page where they check off all their mandated courses, and sometimes we put it so that the course is already checked off for the students. Like, we know in 9th grade, students are going to take these 4 courses. But in terms of their electives, they choose what they want to take. Bless you. They choose what they want to take. They take it home. They discuss their schedules with their parents. Sometimes the parents make recommended changes. They bring it back, signed by the parents, that goes to the guidance department. Now the guidance department inputs the information in February into our student management system, which is eSchools. As a result of that, the assistant principal, the one who does the master schedule for the high school, then develops what is called the course tally. That course tally basically says for this particular course, you have this amount of requests. Based on that, the assistant principal and the principal makes recommendations to the superintendent as to what courses should run based on the course tallies. Now, we're way ahead of that because we haven't really got to that point yet. So these are projections just based on what we currently are offering. Now, there's 2 ways to run a master schedule. There's one is basing your master schedule on course requests, course tallies, that which pique the interest of students, to ensure that students are going to attend, they are going to do their best, to do what is needed in that class to get an acceptably, you know, acceptable grade within that class. And the other way is the superintendent would allocate the FTEs based on the departments, based on past history, to the building principal, and that building principal runs what he can based on the allocation provided by the Board of Education and superintendent. We've always in the past have run him based on student requests, based on student interest. So that would be up to the Board of Education to change or to review, to look at, but there are two ways to run a master schedule.
So just so I understand this, notwithstanding the increase in number of students in the high school, you believe that based on the data you have today, it'll be you can service that entire student body with the increase of the same number of FTEs?
Yes, yes and no. And I want to speak to that where you see the two sort of, you know, text boxes on the side of that. One of the things I wanted to say in terms of course credit requirements for a high school diploma, you need 22 credits, four of which happen to be ELA, English Language Arts, four social studies, three science, three math, a half a credit in health, one art, one language, and two physical educations, and three and a half electives. Now, looking at the amount of courses that you will need to kind of capture your student population, which is based on, let's say, the 600 number, you need to roughly run a certain amount of courses to capture all the kids, or else you're going to have kids in study hall. And we don't necessarily want to do that. We try to avoid that at all costs. So to run a high school at a 9-period day, we're currently, if you look at just the elective program, we're currently allocating 7.9 FTEs to the high school for just elective programs. And what I mean by that is art, business, family, consumer science, and technology, and music. Those are your primary elective programs that we have at the high school. We're currently allocated 7.9 FTEs to it this year. To effectively capture and run a 9-period day, looking at my calculations, you have to run 9.8 to 10.8 FTEs a year to capture that. To capture the amount of students.
To avoid study halls.
Exactly. To avoid study halls. Right now, we do have students in study hall. It's something that, you know, based on the amount of FTEs that has been allocated to the high school over the course of many, many years, we've always, you know, had quite a few students in study hall. And that, once again, is based on the limited number of FTEs that are allocated to our elective program. So, and that is, once again, that's equating to maybe 2 to 3 electives a day. So when you go back to the previous slide, when you look at the typical high school schedule, to make this schedule work, you have to provide students with 2 electives. Unless one of them is going to fit in as a study hall. That is the only possibility.
So when you go to the next slide, are you saying from the green box on the bottom that an additional FTE is necessary to get rid of the study hall? Is that what that means?
I would actually say that 2 FTEs are necessary to get rid of the study hall.
9.8 to 10.8.
We're currently running 7.9.
You say 8 school, you mean our school.
Our school, yes.
Our school must offer 9.8 to 10.8. So additionally, 1 to 2 more, and that
2 to 3 more.
Yeah. Yeah, 2 to 3 more. If you're looking at effectively running it at a, let's say if you allocate 10.8, you know, FTEs for electives.
But when you say effectively running it, you mean no study
hall. No study hall. Exactly.
So, I mean, when I think of this, I think of, like, the slide before, Mr. Soto, where if I'm a senior, for instance, I've already taken my language, I mean, I can figure this out. If I'm a senior, I could have easily 3 study halls.
Easily.
If I played my cards right.
You could actually have almost 4.
Yeah.
You could have 4.
You could have
easily.
Because we don't let our kids leave campus?
We don't.
Right.
We have a closed campus. We have a closed campus, Josh.
Right.
So one of the things to consider, as a senior, there's really only 3 classes that you might actually need. You need English, you need social studies, and gym. That's pretty much it.
And we've pushed it quite a bit. You know, if you look at the electives now, one thing Mr. Caswell's done is an unbelievable job is to have 29 in those classes. We're trying to max those out. Our feelings are when the students are going to go to college, them to be, as an athletic term, in the best shape they should be working the hardest in their senior year going into college. And it's the complete opposite in education today. Many students are taking less courses and not strengthening their knowledge before they enter those courses. That's why a lot of times they need remedial courses when they go to college and they say they're not ready.
So, I'm sorry, go on.
I would agree, though, Josh. So he's saying just to fill the boxes.
Right.
So you look at it that way, which way you're looking at it, yeah, mathematically. Now you have Board of Education goals, and you would say to us, they made a great presentation tonight about a specific elective course that you could either add or substitute. And that's the two different things. And if you added that, would that enhance the Board of Education goals, right? And would it actually help? It definitely would, some students. And that's where it comes. Now, you would say, well, then, Russ, why aren't you recommending more at this point in time? And that's why it's at this point in time, it's just a snapshot. We're looking at retirees, and we have to look at the revenue side. Without seeing the revenue side, sometimes it's hard to understand because the revenue side drives some of our decisions, not just things that would be enhancements.
Understood. So today, though, understood for next year why we need to weigh that and get the data. Mm-hmm. It'd be better there, I understand. So this year, when you look at it this year, I assume that same math, which I screwed up the first time, but
that's
2 to 3 would result in no study halls.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So do we run into a situation now where we've got kids that want to get into elective classes but cannot because they are filled, so have to take study halls?
I answer, Ed, correct me if I'm wrong. I mean, it doesn't happen because when you're doing the master schedule, some students take full day, all the way 9. They take 10, 11 classes if they could.
Right.
They have no lunch. I think the only time that would happen is if in the master schedule, I'm taking music and I'm taking this and that, and then it just doesn't fit in because I have a separate
period. It really all depends on the section, too. Sometimes we run what is called singletons or like a doubleton. A singleton is just one section that is running in that particular course one time a day.
If you have 36...
So, I mean, you don't have availability for every student to get in
because, Josh,
it may be conflicting with another course that the student wants to take.
And say, just say all of a sudden you have 36 students that want to take this new elective course, but you can only put 29 in there mathematically. Obviously, you've got to put it in a particular period. It has to fit those 29. Something you do not get.
Well, that doesn't have to be elective either. It could be Spanish 5 section. It could be an advanced placement course. If you get 30 kids, I can only put 29, so I got to make two sections.
If it's a singleton, you
say. 14 and 15.
Yeah. But realistically,
it's not an exact science. It boils down to a combination of student requests. That's from a purely economical maximization perspective. I have 30 kids that are going to take an AP. Who am I going to take out? Or do we run two sections? That's a decision we have to make.
That's a philosophical decision.
But economically.
Yeah. Okay.
That's a philosophical education.
Spanish 5. We turn a kid away, it's not 4 years Spanish.
Mr. So, how many kids, because then there's other children that would benefit from the schedule, and I mean kids that would go to Eastern Suffolk BOCES. So if they were doing half day to get their academics and then going there for veterinarian school,
and we do have that. We have 15
students.
How many students
do we have at Lemur campus?
15? Yes.
Is that just junior and senior year?
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, this year was really just seniors.
It's only seniors.
It's only seniors this year.
Because we had such an interest from our student body that we actually had to limit it to just seniors. Eastern Suffolk BOCES runs great vocational programs. Some of the programs are only 1 year and some of them are 2 years. So unfortunately, we had to limit the number of students that we were able to send to BOCES for the half-day occupational studies program because we do have a cap of 15, which is graciously provided to us every year by the Board of Education. So it is a cap. But another thing I wanted to mention as well is that I know that we're talking about the possibility of introducing new electives, which I think is a great idea, but another piece that sort of adds to this discussion is one of the Board of Education goals is to increase the advanced Regents diploma rate from this year 55% to a higher percentage next year. These electives, they actually stand for a 5-unit sequence. So a student can actually get an advanced Regents diploma based on taking 5 credits within either art or CTE, which is, you know, which can be business, can be technology. So we have to really just kind of weigh the two. Like if we're thinking of, you know, robbing Peter to pay Paul, we may have other ramifications that we just need to consider prior to doing that. Because your advanced Regents diploma rate may decrease as a result of it, ultimately. All right. The last slide of the presentation, just once again, looks at the overall staffing that is allotted to the high school. We have a principal, assistant principal, the guidance counselors I spoke to. I spoke to the ELL learners as well. The paraprofessionals, we have a 0.3 and a reading teacher. That's one is at 0.3 is allocated to the high school this year, and a 0.3 is allocated to the middle school, and that's once again from the graciousness of the Board of Education that decided to make that change at the beginning of this calendar year. I spoke to the school psychologist, social worker, school nurse, which brings our total allocation to 61.1, which is an increase of 0.3, and that is just contributed to the English language learners, the Part 154 regulation that has been amended that we have to address somehow. There are no changes to the additional support personnel in terms of clericals, custodians, grounds, maintenance. We have one lunch monitor, and we have 3 security guards at the secondary complex, which brings our total additional support FTEs to 10.5. Once again, this is really, out of the 3 buildings, this is the one that is probably the most appropriate to identify it as projections, because we haven't really, you know, started fleshing out the high school schedule. Okay? That concludes the presentation. If anyone has any questions, comments? What?
So, when you're talking about motions before, you're saying it's limited to 15 kids. Are those 15 general education kids?
No, there are some special education students as well.
When our board of education is capping off 15 students that are seniors, those are only kids that do not have. So if you have 15 students that are general education, those are slots for 15 students that would like to have a career track.
Within special education, I do have a separate code that is allotted to students that you are referencing that are IEP-driven career technical plan.
So that means there are some students that are 11th grade that are able to go.
That is correct.
Okay.
Any other questions?
Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
That brings us to the next session of the agenda tonight. Questions, comments on tonight's agenda only. Do we have any questions or comments on tonight's agenda? Okay. Great. Pat, we'd like to, in the interest of time, given that we've got a long exec session tonight, I think going through, if everybody's okay with it, when you come, 5 through 14?
5 through 12,
yeah. 5 through 12?
We should stop at 13. We definitely want to thank
them. Well, we can thank them separately. We'll go at one time. Okay.
I'm good with that. I just want to make sure that we thank them.
As always, Ms. Frank, the work that you do in the PTA and the donations that you're able to provide to us are unbelievable, and we really want to thank everybody, all the members of the PTA, for everything you do. You go above and beyond. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Now I'm good for 5 through 4.
The whole
shebang, lady.
Just read it on out, on the recommendation of the superintendent of schools, and on motion by. That's right. I'm asking for it. Come on, here.
I make a motion that we go 5 through 14.
I second that motion.
All in favor?
Yes.
Yes. Motion carries unanimously.
Okay.
That's fine. Yeah. Thank you. Okay.
So that brings us to section 15 of our agenda. Two items to discuss. So we have we put on the agenda tonight to discuss the veterans exemption. We had a presentation some months ago from Brookhaven Tax Assessor, and we then got some revised numbers. Maybe Mr. Perkins, if you could just explain to us what you explained to me right before the meeting, that there would have to be a hearing, an actual hearing on this on February 11th.
Yes. In order for this information to be given to the town tax assessor by March 1st, that's the deadline, you would have to have a public hearing to give the community an opportunity to voice their opinions or for regards to the veterans exemption, whether they're for, whether they're against. And since we only have one more board meeting, which is February 11th, we would have to have a public hearing.
At the board meeting?
At the, before the board meeting. Typically before the board meeting.
We've done it once before. Didn't we?
We did for something.
So we can figure out the process for it. We have to make a motion whether to have it on as a public hearing.
No, you just... I don't think it's on. It is? Okay. You just have to make a decision to do it. And then what happens is that you have to provide proper notice of the public hearing. It has to be at least 5 days beforehand. It has to be like any other notice, similar to a notice would be of your board meeting, time, place, what you're going to cover. And you have to have two separate hearings if you're considering Gold Star as well. And we recommend that each hearing, you give enough time to each hearing so that not only can you present to the community, but obviously hear what the community has to say back to you.
Can we schedule before a board meeting, like just like at 6 o'clock and have a board meeting at 7:30?
Sure, as long as you provide proper notice. Yeah.
And since we already have notice by people of a board meeting, we can just say it'll be scheduled beforehand?
Sure, sure.
Does putting it on the signs constitute sufficient notice?
It's however you provide notice. I know that you have to publish it in the paper as well. I'll give you all the, you know.
So we can get the process right. From my perspective, I think we should, I'll do what I can. I think that, you know, how much time do we need? A half hour?
Probably a half an hour for each, is what they say.
For each?
Yeah, that's the recommend.
Okay, for veterans and for Gold Star?
Yeah.
Okay. And you need two for Gold Star, you said?
No, one.
Oh,
in other words,
okay.
Three. Gold Star is, in essence, similar to veterans. It's just the parents of deceased veterans.
Right.
So, I shouldn't say it that way.
So, right. So, let's do that. We'll do it at 6:30 on the 11th.
Right, as long as you provide proper notice.
Yeah.
That's fine.
And we can work together to figure out how to provide the proper notice.
I'll get that to you. I'll give you everything.
Okay. And these numbers, Carol, you provided to us for reduced and basic, whether it's $950 for reduced and $1,897 for basic based on the $2,770 average residential assessment, which is, I remember, somebody paying like $9,500 in taxes.
Yes.
Approximately.
Had, in the beginning, the first time Mr. Ryan visited us, he had a different number.
It was like 72 or something.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So... those numbers, are those numbers inclusive of Gold Star and veterans or not?
That isn't, it's an estimation. When he presented, he said at the time, he doesn't really know how many will actually be applying. And so.
But that's inclusive of both groups, the Gold Star
and the
veterans, okay.
Yes.
So for purposes of the hearing, when we, the actual data, are we going to be able to get? Is this the data that we're going to present?
This is the data.
Got it.
It's
okay.
An estimate.
All right. So are we, I don't know if there's more discussion that we need to have.
No, I mean, I didn't realize we had to have a hearing. Thank you for telling me.
So then after the hearing, we vote as a board as to whether we adopt this or not.
Okay. Yes. You would vote at your regular meeting as you would vote on any other resolutions in terms of its adoption.
Right. Okay.
Can you walk through what we present?
All right, that brings us to the next topic on the agenda, 2015-2016 budget calendar.
Yep. So at this point, thank you, Mr. Soto, great presentation. I'm going to kind of leave it to the Board of Education. You have the budget calendar that we rolled over, actually, from last year to this year. We didn't adopt it, or you didn't adopt it as a board. We went with the staffing presentation first. So I guess we're kind of looking for direction as we move forward of what of the presentations do you want, not want? Do you want to condense? Do you want just portions of the buildings? If you kind of give me a little bit, not be everything, but some kind of guidance, then I can prepare or we can prepare for the next presentation.
Sorry, I'm looking at my notes.
Don't take your time. No, take your time. Carol, just write this down when it comes out. So
yes. Are these the right dates, though?
No, those are the dates that was not adopted. That was just something I presented, and the board decided not to adopt it. Decided to do staffing first. So tonight was the staffing. So you see that?
No, replaced. But I mean the dates, not what's
you don't have. Nope, there are no dates right now. Nothing has been established except your regular Board of Education meetings, unless the board tonight says otherwise.
The only dates, though, that we do have to adhere to is the April 1st and the April 22nd.
Right, for the general in front of the,
right.
In the auditorium.
So, and other than that.
It seems to me that, and I think Kristen, that the staffing, you've got the staffing and it made sense, everything that Ricardo walked through, but to take it to that next step, you need the dollars attributed to that and how that looks, both on the mandated lines and the non-mandated lines. That's mm-hmm. kind of... That's kind of what I think is the next step, so that you see really where we are. You know, tie that in with the revenue side of East Mauritius. You said that's assuming 19 come in. I don't know how many are going out from the 12th grade. Is it more or less than 19? So how does that kind of play out? Those would be the two next steps. That deals with, I think, your big and then your bigger dollars. Okay,
so
and I think there's data, you know, like I was taking notes during this, and I think that there's data that would even help us as a board in regards to, like, you know, we spoke a little bit about reading teachers. How many kids are effectively, you know, and what's our historical, because, you know, and I know listening to, you know, Josh, when he keeps saying 5 years, historically, has our reading teachers been around three? And given that, with the use of technology that we've introduced that we're currently paying for, so now we look at the curriculum and instruction. So we're paying for, you know, all these different, you know, Systems 44, Read 180, all these different programs. Are we really, like, and I'm going to quote Josh, are we getting a good bang for our buck? You know, we're paying for these programs, but are any of our FTEs changing? So how many kids did we have before we started these programs? How many kids do we have now? So we can really, like, know this is worth paying for. I think that's where we're inquisitive.
But it's not just numbers of kids, I don't think. I think it's from the experts hearing, is this a good program? Like so it, you know, I think it's kind of in line with what you've got. We've got the staffing. Then we've got the staffing dollars / revenue. The next, I think it would be kind of take what the programs that we've got plus how you want to grow. You know, the curriculum committee recommendations, you know, for the third meeting, I'm saying, and you'd kind of say, here's what we got, here's what we want to grow, here's what we don't think we're effectively spending our money. Mm-hmm. So to Ricardo's point, we've got all these electives today. Well, maybe they're not the best. Maybe we can swap out two and add three, so you're net one, you know, net positive one, you've got one less study hall. But that's kind of the way I think from administration. I would expect to say, here's the money, here's it, here's what we think we can grow, and here's what it will cost you.
Mm-hmm.
Your Board of Education goals are 1.5% growth.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I know that's very, very difficult to do until we see the numbers come from the state.
No, it's okay. Step. So what I'm hearing, just let me be sure, because you mentioned the third meeting as well. So for the next meeting, correct me if I'm wrong, you want to look at things like reading for the last few years. But let me just backtrack. You want to see revenue, right, or projected revenue. You want to see programs such as System 44, Read 180. You want to see the dollars associated to that and how those things are going at this point in time. And there was a mention about reading the last few years.
I think
would that be the next budget presentation?
Right, and that could be the next one.
Well, I'm talking about one at a time. I just want to make sure I'm clear on the next one first.
So I think the next one would be the dollars that we see for what we've got, how that kind of rolls over on the mandated side. And
yeah,
then
not just reading, but the whole thing.
Yeah. And then the next one would be kind of along the lines of what Kristen's saying. What are the programs that we've got? Are we happy with them? Can we do better? What are the electives that we've got? Are we happy with them? Can we do better? and where do we want to, where do, from administration's perspective, where do we want to grow? Where do we want to add dollars, and where are we going to find that?
Okay. I mean, I'm sure, you know, like even for Mr. Caswell, you know, knowing the high school students, are our electives the best electives, or some of the stuff that Mrs. Bates presented with curriculum committee tonight, should we have an elective on essay writing? You know what I mean? Like, just trying to play all those different scenarios out, obviously keeping, you know, obviously looming over our head with the 10%. Even with guidance counselors and social workers, I don't know how many times they do home visits, like for social workers, guidance counselors. I know some guidance counselors in some school districts, they teach a period here and there. They could be, you know, guidance counselors are the perfect people to really work with some of that college information. Taking some of those crazy essays and saying, okay, how can we have maybe one course, not you know, one class senior year where guidance counselors are maybe working on some of that essay stuff.
Okay.
You know, what's expected. I don't know, just different things to think
about. Okay, so I'm hearing a lot. I just want to make sure. One, I'm going to ask just to shoot me an email tomorrow, just so somebody, if you don't mind, I don't care, because I want to make sure I'm clear, because I believe what you're looking at is the revenue, and you're looking at the expenses of what you saw tonight. Taking what Ricardo did tonight, taking those and putting a dollar figure to it, and also showing you revenue for the next meeting. Following that, we get into a lot of issues, which are all really important, right? Yeah. Talking out now about guidance, talking about B180 system 144, growth, what we're looking for 5 years, replacing electives, possibly, and so on.
I mean, I think that's the whole that third meeting that you're talking about, where you're looking at growth, and what we've got is the whole bottoms up. We see what we've got, the staffing, both mandatory and non, the staffing dollars, mandatory and non. And then let's take a look at this bottoms up. If we could think outside the box, how would you build it today, and what does that mean over the next, you know, over the next 5 years? That's how I think.
I think I got effective. It. You got it? We're good? What's Monica? Are you not good with that?
You don't like that?
No, I like it. No, I just want to make sure. That's all right. We have it on audio now.
Questions and comments from the community on items not on this agenda? Do we have any questions or comments? Yes. Can you come up?
Just so we can get you on tape, just for the rest of the community members. I know, but people are listening.
Jeanette Lopez, I just have a question for clarification. For number 6, where you have the per diem substitute paraprofessional. Can you just clarify for me, with that title, does that person have teacher certification qualification?
A paraprofessional does not, and correct me if I'm wrong, Ricardo, if you're still here, a paraprofessional does not have to have certification in teaching. I think many of ours do, or some of them do, but no, you do not need to have a teacher certification.
So why doesn't it say aid instead?
Why doesn't it say aid instead of?
Because an aid does not have to have teacher certification, correct?
I'm lost here. I see per diem substitute paraprofessional. Paraprofessional's in the contract, right?
So paraprofessional?
Yes. That's what
right.
Do you want to answer that? Yeah. Sure. Identify our aides. There's some the terms are somewhat synonymous. Some districts provide the term of aid. Classroom aid, we identify our support staff as paraprofessionals. They do the same job.
Thank you.
So, Mr. Soto, a student requires a teacher assistant. That's how
that
would be listed here.
Well, I can't hear the question. I just want to have an opportunity for Ms. Glasser to respond.
Sure.
Mr. Soto, I want to make sure I'm understanding you correctly. I mean, usually what happens is you have two positions. You have the paraprofessionals and you have the aides. They are separate positions. You're saying in your district they're not separate.
No, we don't.
Okay.
In our district, we have teachers assistants that are certified classroom teachers that work within our 811 program. And then other positions are paraprofessionals.
Okay, so
they could work as a classroom aide or they could work as a one-to-one aide for support to one particular student.
Yeah, your aide is a civil service position?
Yes.
Yes, and your paraprofessional is not. So that's also a difference.
Paraprofessional is a civil service position. No, our teaching assistants.
I mean teaching assistants. I'm sorry, that's what I meant to say. Your teaching is
part of the CMTA contract.
Yes, and that's what I meant to say.
And paraprofessionals have a separate contract, which is part of the paraprofessional contract.
Yes, and I meant to say that, and I apologize to you. Yeah, the teaching assistants are not civil service, and aides are. Yeah.
Sorry about that.
Thank you.
Anybody else have any other questions on the items not on the agenda tonight?
Jenica, no. I just have a question. Do we have, well, I guess this would be for Mr. Soto, too. Do we have resource room offered at the elementary school?
No.
We don't have, so we don't have any children at the elementary school that require resource room?
No. Okay. It's quite incorporated within the classroom.
No, so if you have a student with, so there's no students with IEPs.
So we're not going to talk about individual IEPs.
No, I'm just saying students. In general, though, I just find it odd that, because the, that we don't have resource room available at the elementary school, that there's only the DCT model.
So where?
I'm just saying it's part of the continuum, so I just, because I didn't see resource room mentions. So when we're looking at the budget and hiring, and just want to make sure that we have resource room as part of the continuum for the elementary school as well, but maybe that's not required.
Yeah, we're in compliance with the IEPs that we've got for each of the individual students in our district.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks. Any other questions for anybody? Great. Make a motion to adjourn to executive session for purposes of. Purposes of to discuss the following: discussion regarding proposed, pending, or current litigation, collective negotiations under the Taylor Law with paraprofessional unit, security, custodial, clerical, an RFP, and acquisition, sale, or lease of real property. Public discussion of which would potentially affect the value of the property. Motion?
Motion.
Second?
Second.
All in favor?
Yes.
Motion carries unanimously. Thank you.